You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello and happy new year, my beautiful people, the beautiful people. I sure hope your new year is off to a good start. I feel terrible for those impacted by the terrorist attacks last week, as I'm sure you do. The New Orleans one hits close to home. I've been on Bourbon Street probably 50 times, and to see the videos of people getting hit by a truck going 60 miles an hour, that was just horrific. There's one video. I don't know if you saw the black dude that was interviewed by CNN saying that he lost his friend. There's a CCTV video. It's kind of hard to find, but it is awful. You see three people hanging out in the middle of the street, and the girl is looking at her phone. And I imagine one of them yelled because two of them take off for the sidewalk to get out of the way. And sadly, the girl was looking at her phone, and when she picked up her head and realized that she needed to run, she ran the wrong way. And in the video, it looks like she disappears. But if you slow it down, which I didn't do, I just saw that somebody said this in the comments. But if you slow down the video to half speed, you can see the top half of her conform to the front of the truck and over the hood. And And then you have the New Orleans Police Department Superintendent Kirkpatrick, I think is her name. She said, "We had a plan, but the terrorists defeated it." The fuck are you still doing in that position? This DEI stuff has to die. I'll talk more about her later. But when I heard her say, "I didn't know we had barriers or bollards, whatever they call them, that we could have used," immediately I thought, God, you are not only incompetent, but incredibly stupid. I mean, I envisioned the victims' families and their attorneys playing that clip on a loop in court as they successfully sue for millions of dollars. I mean, I hope they get it. So maybe that was a gift. Before I start, we got a lot to get to today. Who remembers that 96 classic I just sang, "The Beautiful People" by Marilyn Manson? That song came out the year I got my driver's license. And you know what they say, the music that you listen to in high school is probably the music you'll cherish the rest of your life. I thought today we'd talk about music and investing, the politics of race, maybe a little DEI, of course, if you're going to talk about race, tribalism, a lot of ground to cover. First episode of 2025. I had a sound system in my first car or Jeep. It was a Jeep Wrangler. And I would listen very loudly to certain songs like Oasis, Wonderwall, and Toadies, Possum Kingdom, Plowed by Sponge. I love that Mazzy Star song, "Fade Into You." I actually played that one a few weeks ago for my wife because it's just such a beautiful tune. If you're looking for something beautiful to listen to, "Fade Into You" by Mazzy Star. It's crazy to think now, but in that Jeep, I had one of those stereos where you had to snap the faceplate in place. You remember those? You had to get one if you drove a convertible of any kind because it was so easy to steal a stereo system in a convertible. And this was just when car alarms were coming on the scene. And man, did I jam in that Jeep. I had two 10s in the back. I had a little sound system with a Rockford Fosgate amp and then 6x9s on the tires and little Boston acoustic speakers in the front. I loved driving that thing. And I'm sure my neighbors didn't like that. They didn't like that I loved it, probably. I mean, unless they were fans of the Toadies. But I don't see a dad playing "Do You Wanna Die" for his little girl playing hopscotch in the driveway. That probably wasn't happening, but you never know. Some of my best memories from those days are just blasting tunes out in a field somewhere with all the homies and has-beens. We were very much into Pearl Jam back then. Many a Friday night were spent singing "Footsteps" at the top of our lungs. Me and E, where you at, E? He was one of my homies, still is. Which is kind of cool. My brother introduced me to Pearl Jam when I was in fifth grade. The 10 album came out August 91. Yeah, that was my first month of fifth grade. And just so you know, if I got stranded on a deserted island, if I had to pick one CD to take, it'd probably be Pearl Jam 10. And maybe you're thinking, CD? Why? And I'm banking on Wilson having a CD player on the island that we could use. No chance. Wilson has Wi-Fi. So no Spotify lists. Speaking of Spotify, I think about investing a lot, as you might imagine. And one of the things I've long said is that if you're going to dabble in individual stock investing and you're unsure where to start, start by just looking around. Figure out which products or services everybody seems to be using and addicted to, and start your search there before trying to invest in companies. That's where I would start my search, is with the companies that people are using. If you'd been doing that over the last 10 years, you'd be insanely wealthy. And that's not investment advice. I don't give investment advice. There'd be no quicker way to go broke than take investment advice from some podcaster. So don't do it. Not this one, at least. But think of it like Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Microsoft, Meta. Like, why didn't I buy Lululemon stock when it first came on the scene? And back when it was worn by only fit people. You remember those days? Back before women who are 5 foot, 225 lbs started sporting the leggings. Back in 2012, you could have bought Lululemon stock for about $50 a share, and you would have 7x'd your money. I've had a Spotify subscription since probably around the same time, 2012, somewhere around there, and I don't see myself ever getting rid of it. You could have bought Spotify stock just a couple years ago in 2022 for about $70 a share. Today, it's about $450 a share, $450. So you would have nearly 7x'd your money there too. And how cool would it be if all the music that you had from your high school years was compiled in lists? That's something current high schoolers can do, and I'm sure they take it for granted. But to be able to have those lists forever, they will appreciate having those high school lists when they're older, like me. We older folks, we have to try to remember songs we listened to in high school or college and then scour the web trying to find it. It was just a few days ago, I put Dirty on 85 in a Google search. I was looking for an old song. And if you know, then you were riding dirty too. But maybe your favorite music isn't from that long ago. I really like when Spotify does the wrap at the end of the year. They tell you which songs that you've listened to most. Do you want to know what my five were? I'll tell you. So in no particular order, Doja Cat, Take You Around the World, They Don't Have to Understand, Rub It in Their Face, Put a Rock on Her Hand. No clue why I like that one. Creepin' is another one. 21 Savage is in that song. There's another 21 Savage song, and I forget who sings it, but it's called Surround Sound. I know 21 Savage is featured in there. On God. Heat Waves, Sometimes All I Think About Is You, or Some Days All I Think About Is You. Late Nights in the Middle of June. That's a jam. Without Me, my girl Halsey, who I really wanted to see when I was in Budapest, but they had a big festival when we were there in August, and I missed it. There are a couple of good remixes of that song, too. One of them is called Script. It's like an acoustic version, or not acoustic, I guess she's just singing. And then there's another one featuring Juice WRLD. I don't know if he's called Juice WRLD, but it's Juice WRLD. So there are a couple of, there's a variety of Without Me's that are good. You know what would make me not like myself? Is if I was one of those people who personalized every generalization. You know those people who think to themselves, well, does what he said apply to me? Like maybe their favorite music isn't from high school or college. They've got to let you know that they're an exception to the rule every time. Or worse, they'll say, your generalization isn't correct because they're not like that. And that is evidence of low-mindedness. If your favorite movie or music is from your yuppie years, congrats, bro, but keep it to yourself. Just kidding. Send me an email. I'm interested. You can say, man, I am an exception to every generalization. And then you can tell me why people should never generalize because you're offended. Here's a question. Would an unclear thinker who's terrible at pattern recognition know what that they're being that guy, what I call the exception guy? No, they will not. Not only do they not know what they don't know, they stubbornly don't care what they don't know. Probably a Dem. Have any of you had political discussions with friends who have opposing views lately? I've had to stop doing that because I've come to the realization that our sources of info are so siloed that they don't know anything. Unless they'd be willing to seek information from outlets they disagree with, but I don't know anybody doing that. I've talked to two Dems since the election who, when the discussion turned to politics, one of them asked, "Who is Tucker Carlson?" And another one said, "Who is Greg Gutfeld?" Can you imagine thinking you're well-versed in the goings-on in politics in America and not knowing who those guys are? Tucker was dismissed by many because he put forth the idea of replacement theory. Remember how racist Trump was for saying that those other countries aren't sending their best? That we have rapists and murderers coming through the southern border? Leftists don't live in reality. So things that are happening, they'll say that's preposterous and not happening. And then some loser immigrant with four names, because, you know, especially those Venezuelans usually have four names, they'll rape and murder a little girl in a small town, and, well, Trump was right again. Then not living in reality, they, of course, fight imaginary enemies. Remember their search within the military for white supremacists? Leftists, in their power-obsessed worldview, they only search for racism in white people. I think they changed the definition of racism to something where only white people could be racist. I don't know, I'd have to check the dictionary, but nobody uses dictionaries anymore. Probably you can get it from a fact checker. They're honest. And that's, of course, how they end up ignoring gang rapes, like in the UK. These Pakistani rape gangs where 10 men are raping an 11-year-old girl, how is that a partisan issue? I'll tell you how, because Elon Musk has called attention to it, and he supports Trump. So that's what the West is up against. The reason all the talk of Trump being dark and chaotic was so scary to me is because the best indication we have of what Dems are going to do or plan to do is what they accuse Trump of. So we get rape gangs and terror attacks and new wars and all sorts of darkness these last several years. Or think about Twitter. From like 2015 to just a couple years ago when the Musk acquisition happened, it was pretty much run by the federal government. Their little henchmen were, of course, young liberal women and femme dudes who take pictures with their mouth open. But social media got real dark. Everybody was forced to speak in code to avoid breaking unwritten rules. And a lot of people make their living on social media. And they didn't want to risk being shadow banned or worse, have their account shut down without being given any explanation whatsoever. And of course, you knew the racism would pick up because they were so quick to accuse conservatives of being racist. I want to say the accusation of racism or the mention of the word race in the New York Times went up like thousands of percent during the Trump years. And we all know DEI is racism. In case you're new to people talking openly about this and honestly about what the hell's been going on in the country these past few years, there are rape gangs in the UK. Muslim men raping young white girls and targeting white girls. I saw an interview with one of the Pakistani Muslims who said that they view white girls like chewing gum on the side of the road, that they can do whatever they want with them. I think for the West, the years 2020 to 2024 will probably be viewed as the darkest period of the 21st century, if it's reported accurately, if we can get honest historians. But let's hope things don't get darker in the next 75 years. We all know how dark the last century was. I've also seen where Doge retweeted something that the Biden account posted about his commitment to climate change or combating climate change. And the Doge comment was, "Climate change is a money laundering scheme that we're going to put an end to." I love seeing that. I think I've talked about this before, but I was sitting at a cafe in Europe with a buddy of mine, former buddy, his choice, not mine, of course. And when the discussion turned to politics, he would keep going back to climate change. It was his number one issue. And any ideas I'd bring up, because he said he was an idea guy, he would dismiss it out of hand because he didn't want to challenge the argument. He would just say that I was either brainwashed or raised by Republicans. So I said to him, how do we even accurately measure the temperature of the earth? And of course, he was indignant and got turd face. And I could tell he was stumped because that wasn't an idea that, you know, he had thought of. And it took him a couple of seconds to answer. But you know what he said? He said, bro, you can just stick a thermometer in the water. Okay, bro. Why didn't I think of that? And I heard all these climate models are going to save trillions of dollars. Are there other models that can predict the future, especially those that depend on economic activity? Or am I just too stupid to get it? We weren't friends much longer after that discussion. But you know what? I knew prior to that day, prior to our chat that day, I knew what he believed. And his responses were very predictable because I know other diehards who were always posting nonsense on Facebook, as he would. Let me say something else about climate change. It's nuts to me that after all the hoaxes and BS that we've lived through, that there are still people who buy into the climate change agenda. They believe the same people who blew the Afghanistan withdrawal, allowed an invasion of the country, seen little girls raped and murdered, not to mention the number of kids that are missing thanks to the border crisis. They did the lawfare thing to another human, trying to put him in a cage the rest of his life. Tried to kick their political opponent off the ballot, lied about Biden's mental health, called the videos of him deepfakes. I won't even mention because I shouldn't have to, but what they did to humans by way of COVID or the attempts to kill Trump. In spite of all that, there are many people who think leftists care so much about people who will live on the earth 100 years from now that they'd be willing to harm our standard of living relative to the Chinese or those in India. They're going to harm our standard of living to hopefully keep temperatures from rising 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit 100 years from now. And they'll suffer nothing themselves, right? They're not going to make any sacrifices. They're not going to sacrifice money. They're only going to fly private. None of it impacts them at all. It hurts poor people, of course. But what do they need to save the earth in the name of climate change, which used to be called global warming? By the way, my former friend told me that the name was changed from global warming to climate change because people were too stupid to get it. Yeah, all they need to save the world 100 years from now is more power today and more of our money today. I'm starting to think the only way I'd ever vote these people back into power, these people who are so much better than us, well, maybe not entirely better, just smarter and more compassionate, more tolerant, more evolved and progressive, all those quality characteristics. I was thinking the only way I'd ever vote for them again is if I personally had an abortion. Have you thought about how vocal you'd be come election time, how much activism you might do if you had actually had an abortion? I would think the emotional and psychological toll something like that would take on a woman would be massive. And to me, it stands to reason that had you aborted your baby, you'd want other women probably doing it too. Misery loves company. Like, it might be hard to be silent when that topic is discussed if you had in fact had an abortion yourself. I mean, I would think you'd do all sorts of things to appease yourself and assuage yourself of guilt if possible. You know, I have a friend who works at a reproductive health clinic, like a Planned Parenthood type of place. And I asked her one time, I said, what type of patients come through there? Is it mostly poor people, minorities, victims of rape or incest? And she was like, no, you would be surprised. She said, it's mostly more affluent women who don't want a third child. But yeah, these people who don't know who Gutfeld or Tucker Carlson is, you know, Gutfeld took the top spot in late night shows back in 2021. He surpassed Colbert. and his audience is still growing like crazy. I think it's up like 35% or something in the last year, or maybe since the election. I don't know. But let's talk about Colbert for a second. I used to praise him for being the quickest mind on television. How do these guys get so soft when they get older? Is it loss of testosterone? There are just too many examples to think it's anomalous. You got Howard Stern, Jimmy Kimmel. Who else? Did you see the photo of Colbert and Kimmel? Jimmy Kimmel, John Oliver, Seth Meyers, and Jimmy Fallon. Someone on X said, caption this photo. And the best caption I could come up with was, we're all actors, even when we talk to each other. Because I imagine sitting at a dinner with those guys, and they'd just be acting the whole time. And leave it to me to be the one to say, fellas, hey, can we just drop the facade and be real just for tonight? I remember watching Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Great show, by the way. That's Seinfeld's Netflix show. And he had Jimmy Fallon on, and it was so boring and unfunny. Because the way it works, they kind of spend the day together and just have a conversation. And I remember Fallon actually saying it's hard for him to keep a conversation going with his guests until the commercial break. And ever since then, I see him on TV, and I can see how painful it is for him. But it's got to be exhausting to be acting every second you're on air. In Fallon's case, if everything's funny, nothing is. The exception guy or gal that I just mentioned, they've damn near ruined comedy these last several years. But I see stereotyping returning, I think. I hope the racial jokes make a comeback too. Because those are usually the funniest jokes, because they're true. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a stereotype. Or funny. I saw a meme the week before New Year's that said, if something I said in 2024 offended you, please know that next year, you need to get better and not take things so personally. Those who talk shit, they tend to be equal opportunity offenders, meaning they're just as likely to make fun of you or your race as much as their own. And while you might be an exception, you don't get to be accepted when your race is clowned. People do it because it's funny. Like I said, it's funny if it's true. And we could all benefit from the ability to laugh at ourselves. You realize how many people have never laughed at themselves? Ever? Wouldn't it be hard to live with yourself if you couldn't laugh at yourself? I think so. The most well-adjusted people I know laugh at themselves all the time. They have very little ego, so they're open-minded, willing to change their mind. I don't know if you've spent time with millennials or Gen Z. I don't like labeling people according to the generation they were born into. But since we're stereotyping, let's just say younger folks, though. Something I noticed among them, and it's got to be an age thing. I'll be at a dinner party, and when a race is even mentioned, they get that look on their face that says, I can't believe you just said that. And then they'll either say, racist, or they'll get turd face and say, that's racist. Of course, racist is a word nearly devoid of its meaning nowadays. And it's because of the sort of thing I'm talking about. If everything is racist, just like funny. If everything's racist, nothing is. There was this black dude who parked behind my car one day as I was trying to pull out of my driveway. So I said, bro, you mind moving your car? I'm about to leave. So he moves his car. And then the next day I see on the neighborhood Facebook group that somebody's posted a picture of that same guy stealing a package. They got him on their Ring camera. But it was hard to make out his face in the photo. So people started commenting, trying to figure out if it was the same guy that somebody had seen a couple weeks ago just walking the neighborhood, scoping it out. And they were pleading with everybody, stay vigilant, be on the lookout, you know, that kind of thing. But nobody would give a description of him, which I know is common nowadays, if it's a white guy at least. Or I'm sorry, if it's not a white guy, you don't want to give a description. It might be called racist. Everybody's afraid of being called racist. Ask Keir Starmer. And if he's not white, the media is going to work their magic, right? Find a way to make him at least a little white, make him white adjacent or something. You remember the New York Times saying that the guy in Florida, George Zimmerman, was a white Hispanic? And then somebody dug into the newspaper archives, the New York Times archives, and found that nobody had ever been, that label had never been applied to anywhere in the paper before. It had never been written, ever. So since nobody was going to give a description of this dude, I knew what he looked like, and I decided I was going to chime in. So I said he looked to be early 20s. I said he was black, meaning he was very black, meaning his skin tone was a darker hue than what you'd see in traditional African Americans. And he had that jaundiced look in his eye, you know, that yellowish tint in the whites of his eyes. I said he had a little Wayne haircut, and I took a guess at where he's from. I said he was Somali looking. Well, what do you think happened next? Do you think my neighbors thanked me for being so descriptive, showing concern for the safety and well-being of the community? So now they know what to look for and make sure that they're vigilant and their home isn't burglarized? No, they didn't. I got no thank yous. No chance of that. In fact, I got a message with the opposite that said all that was unnecessary and that she was offended. What has been more common in the U.S. over the past decade or so than some awful taking offense on behalf of somebody they perceive to be a victim of society? Anyway, don't let me see that pirate again, because I will tell him where to go. And it wouldn't be hell. It'd be Helen's house. Not really. That's not something I would do. But hey, Helen, can we make a New Year's resolution? Let's not take offense for somebody you perceive to be beneath you. That sort of mentality is ruining the West, what I call suicidal compassion. Here's a suggestion. Get your superiority complex from doing hard things and tell us about that instead, Helen. That's a good goal for you, Helen. I doubt she's listening because that would expose her to ideas that make her uncomfortable. So somebody please relay this message to Helen. What makes the Helen type so insufferable, I'm not going to go there. I'll just say, if somebody talks shit about a group of people, it's usually meant to be funny. If it's not funny to you, don't laugh. But don't take offense on behalf of somebody else. Nobody thinks you're virtuous or even believes you're really offended. If you want to help, volunteer your time or write a check. But just advertising your bleeding heart, that's not helping anybody. Those who live in reality know how little racism there is in America. If you live through DEI, which I'm sure you've noticed, something like a third of major corporations have cut their DEI programs since the election. But back before DEI and before Obama's presidency, if you've lived long enough to witness all that, you're old enough to remember how little race mattered before Obama was elected. And in 2024, of course, Trump puts together the most diverse electorate in the history of the country. And it's so incredible, the news can't stop talking about it. That's all we hear about. That's not true. Of course, that's not true. They're not going to talk about that. But the fact that there's so little racism is why some leftists have to reach so far to find it. And then when they come up empty-handed, they just make it up, which is what they do. They make shit up. When the demand for racism exceeds the supply, what else are you going to do? You got to make it up. That's how they try to get elected. That's how you get Kamala Harris calling Jesse Smollett she called the situation a modern day lynching. Or you probably saw the Duke lacrosse accuser finally admitted that she had made the whole thing up. But I'm sure they've apologized, said they were wrong. Because when I think of accountability, I think of all these crazy women and feminine men in power. Like when Hillary blamed her election loss on herself, that masterclass in self-reflection where she tried to figure out where she went wrong or what she could have done better. Because if you don't do that, then you just turn bitter, right? Turn yourself into a victim. Place blame on everybody but yourself. Blame Russia or misogyny or James Comey. You'd basically have a long laundry list of excuses. There was a show I used to listen to on AM radio that dealt with male-female relations. And during the intro music, they would play little sound bites or movie clips that would fit the theme of the show. So they'd play this scene from As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson, where Nicholson, he plays a writer, and he walks into the publisher's office, his publisher, and when he's leaving, the female receptionist asks him, "How do you write women so well?" And he says, "I think of a man. And then I take away reason and accountability. Hopefully these past 4 years will be used as a lesson for the rest of time. And that lesson would be what happens when you combine DEI with a lack of accountability. Did you know the president's administration has 3,000 employees? Do you know how many have been fired these past 4 years? None. When they took office and decided to do the opposite of everything Trump did, they took it as far as they could. Trump was the you're fired guy, and Dems decided that they were the opposite. So nobody fired or even asked to resign, regardless of what they did or didn't do. How can you run an organization of 3,000 people and not one of them loses their job? Well, what are you going to do? Fire somebody for incompetence? You can't do that. You don't implement DEI and start looking for the most competent people. DEI is the opposite of looking for the best people. It's the opposite of meritocracy. You know where else that happens? Communist countries. Some non-leftists, I feel like, don't quite understand how powerful TDS is and the effect it has on people. I'll admit, I didn't either at first until I tried interacting with somebody who had it. It is the weirdest interaction, and it'll probably stick with me the rest of my life because it's such a unique thing to witness. You're trying to reason with somebody who's emotionally riled up, and it's not like a fight with your crazy ex-girlfriend where they make no sense. No, this is a grown man you're talking to with a graduate degree, a six-figure income, has a family to support, but his emotions regularly overwhelm his intellect, which that's the start of delusion, right? You're not going to reason them out of that. I listed all the hoaxes that they fell for in an article I wrote for manoverseas.com. It was called Projection, Politics, and Other Bullshit. As I said last episode, it's much easier to convince someone of a lie than it is to convince them that they've been lied to. I saw where Scott Adams said the only way he knows how to persuade somebody out of their delusions, well, he says you're not going to do it with facts and reason. And I tend to agree with that. Someone who's real gullible has to come to their own conclusions. So what he encourages non-leftists to do is to state the hoax. And he recommends starting with the fine people hoax, then just letting it marinate. Let them arrive at their truth on their own, not their truth, arrive at the truth on their own. If they're going to at all, mostly no. But he believes it's the only chance you've got if you're ever going to have any success at all. And the reason he says to start with the fine people hoax is because that one's so easily debunked. All you need to do is watch the full video to see how much the Dems and their mouthpieces in the media successfully propagandize the public. But it's also recommended to start there because that was the big lie used to divide and conquer us. In fact, Biden said that Trump saying that Nazis were fine people, that was the reason he decided to run. So the fact checkers, of course, needed to decide, are we going to stand on principle, or are we going to continue to serve as propaganda outlets for the cause? Which one do you think they chose? And I use Biden decided to run. I use that loosely because he was probably told he was going to be installed and what the plan was. Maybe not the whole plan, because he was real dumb even before dementia. And no way they'd trust somebody like that to keep their mouth shut. But yeah, there's no way that he was like, oh, I'm going to run. Because he was doing things, you know, with China and Ukraine and things that you wouldn't do when you're trying to run for political office. I don't think when he stopped being VP, he had aspirations of being the president. I don't think he thought he could get elected, but I think he was told. But yeah, he was doing some corruption, you know, once he got out of office, because I don't know that he has skills to make money for himself. Plus, the left-leaning Snopes debunked the fine people thing. So reasonable people thought there might be a mea culpa after this left-leaning fact-checker said their piece. No, they didn't. Reasonable people didn't expect a mea culpa, is what I'm saying. No one expected an apology. That would be accountability, which we've already covered. But you can still find the edited clip. It's still out there somewhere. It's still alive. But like racism, it's on life support, kept alive by the same people, in fact. Recall what Thomas Sowell said. He said racism isn't dead, but it is on life support, kept alive by politicians and race hustlers and others who get a sense of superiority by denouncing people as racist. You know what I've loved to seeing through the years is how many people have been made aware of Thomas Sowell thanks to X Twitter. I think that's what I'm going to call it from now on. X Twitter. It works. The app formerly known as Twitter is X Twitter. Anyway, I started reading Thomas Sowell in my 20s, early 20s, and I was completely enthralled. Like, I felt like I was getting a leg up. Like, I was getting away with something knowing all this and knowing how many others had never heard of him. Like, I would get into political discussions and ask if they knew who Thomas Sowell was, and they never knew. But he writes about economics and culture and provides as much practical wisdom as any other author I can think of, maybe with the exception of Robert Greene. But yeah, modern wisdom is hard to find. There's a good book called Modern Wisdom, actually. I can't think of who wrote it now, but Charlie Munger is another place to get elementary worldly wisdom. So nowadays, even though Sowell isn't on X Twitter, there's an account called Thomas Sowell Quotes, and they post his quotes or passages from his books quite a bit. I went through a phase in my 20s where I got really into economics and quickly came to realize that Sowell was my favorite economist, at least favorite economist alive. I think Friedman died in 2006. But when I'm learning about economics from the likes of Friedman or Sowell or even Hayek, I was thinking, what if the smartest people in America knew all this? Like, especially if they're in a position to influence policy decisions and make a difference. Like, why don't more people in influential spots study the work of Friedman and Sowell? And what do you know, 15, 20 years later, this is the sort of thing that makes me feel like we're in a simulation. I started to see Elon Musk post Milton Friedman videos. And it seems like more youngsters are being introduced to Sowell every day. Hell, even Joe Rogan talks about Thomas Sowell now. Rogan, by the way, used to say Obama was his favorite president, but Rogan is like as open-minded as it gets. You know, he's so curious and he asks great questions. He's a great conversationalist. And I always feel like people, because he's so good at it, people kind of don't recognize that that's a skill set, or they don't have that skill set. Kind of like, you'll never be complimented by somebody who doesn't know how to negotiate on your negotiating skills. It's the same thing with leadership. Like, if you've never been in a leadership position, you don't understand what good leadership even looks like. That's just something I've noticed. But I see Rogan has matured maybe 30 years in 10, my opinion anyway. It's been amazing to watch his evolution, his metamorphosis through the years. Just as an example, he couldn't believe that Obama lied about the women making 83 cents to a man's dollar. He was like a little kid when he talked about it. He played the clip and was like, he lied. He just flat out lied to America about that. It was like one of those theater kids playing opposite day moments where, like, when Trump came to power, it was said he was the biggest liar in the world. Of course, the truth is that he's probably the most honest politician we've ever had. Partly because he's not a politician. He wasn't trained to speak for 20 minutes without saying anything, because that would be the death of his business interests, right? Business people, they would come to office with a checklist and like a to-do list and want to check all the stuff off and do what they said they're going to do, because somebody like Trump, who's 78 years old, he's got a lifetime. He's got 50 years of doing what he said he's going to do. Otherwise, he'd lose all his money. And of course, politicians aren't that way. You don't face the consequences of your decisions as a politician. It falls on everybody else to bear the brunt of your bad decisions. And Rogan also got pissed about Obama repeating the fine people hoax on the campaign trail for Biden. And then, of course, endorsed Trump the day before the election. But I promise you, Rogan didn't know who Tom Sowell was 10 years ago, because you cannot follow Friedman and Sowell's work and be an economic illiterate. That is just not possible. And he would admit that he was an ignoramus when it came to economics. Oh, the reason I brought up this sound system in my Jeep is because of the karma I experienced. And this is, I like to think I live my life this way, but I've never had anything, I've only had one thing from me stolen in my life, ever. And I've never stolen anything ever. Like, not even when I was seven. And there was plenty of opportunity. Like, if my brother did something bad to me and then took off on his bike to a friend's house, I would walk by his room and think, I should get him back and just steal that money on his floor or steal a baseball card or something. But I couldn't bring myself to do it. And it might stem from being raised in the church, I don't know. Or maybe knowing the golden rule, or both, probably. But I guess in this instance, it'd probably be the reverse of the golden rule, where you don't do unto others what you wouldn't want done to you. What's that rule called? I don't know what it is, but I'll keep calling it the inverse of the golden rule. I know the golden rule comes from the Bible. I think it's Matthew 7:12. So yeah, I've never been stolen from, at least that I know of, until I was almost out of high school. And I always attribute it to karma that nobody had taken anything from my Jeep, because it would have taken 5 seconds to unsnap the speakers and pull them out. But when I was almost graduated from high school, there was a kid in the neighborhood. He was a little older than me, and he'd come over he only did this once. He came over to work out with me. And in the room where my weights were set up, I had a stereo where I'd play Wilson's favorite CDs. And about a week later, the same dude drives by in his car and sees me outside and stops to say hello. And so I'm leaning into his car in the passenger side and in the window, and I saw the rare Two Live Crew CD that would fire me up to do bench press that had gone missing a week earlier. Dude had stolen two of my CDs that day we worked out together. And the reason that story is fresh in my mind is because I see him on TV and like in commercials and on billboards all the time. He's a defense attorney now, and he talks with the Texas drawl, which is new. It's funny. Somebody sent a clip of one of his commercials into the group chat and said, when did he pick up a Texas twang? I mean, he went from talking like you and me to something like, you can just call me from the pickup and that phone rang and we can go ahead and start talking over my office, deadgummit. And I'll put on some Kari Morrow and have my dog be sitting there. You know that dog ain't on hunt. It's like, what? That dude, that is new. But I don't hold grudges for 30 years. He and I are friends now, and because all my grudges end at the 25-year mark. Just kidding. If anyone listening wronged me in high school, you are forgiven, I promise. A few episodes ago, I talked about actors and politics. Well, you know who else likes to go into politics? Lawyers. I once dated an attorney. She had a theater background and invited me to sit in on one of her court cases. It was boring, but it was so performative, and that's what interested me, like her acting ability. And to her credit, she had the judge eating out of her hand, but it was all so phony. I hated it. Something else I did in my 20s, I would subscribe to the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. And my reasoning was that I wanted to know both sides of the argument. Of course, the New York Times is also, it's now a propaganda rag, but it was once considered the newspaper of record. Actually, probably all three of the major American newspapers were once considered the newspaper of record. A newspaper of record is just a national newspaper that has a large enough circulation to be considered authoritative. So the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, they've all been considered a paper of record. But those days are gone. The Washington Post official slogan is, democracy dies in darkness. There you go. Plan opposite day. Day. Which, now that the light is going to be shined on Washington, it'll be interesting to see what we get. Are we going to get transparency in government by way of DOGE? All the leftists believe we've reached the end of democracy, and we're facing a peaceful transition of power to Hitler. What a joke. But maybe these people can switch to comedy, them being a joke and all. But they don't like comedy. No, they tried to kill comedy. Do you know who owns the Washington Post? Jeff Bezos. Who is obviously one of the brightest minds we have, right? Do you think one of the most tech-savvy business people in America bought a newspaper for its return on investment? Surely he wouldn't invest in an entity that's bleeding subscribers and readers and money, would he? Answer, yes. Yes, of course he would. Why would he do that? Well, you don't think Sam Walton would have bought up all the three-letter networks in the 80s if he could have? the three-letter network. So you know how much of their advertising revenue comes from pharmaceutical companies? They put a girl in a sundress dancing among the blue bonnets, and you think you're watching a Summer's Eve commercial? That is until you hear, ask your doctor about Vulcamax or whatever. And then they list the side effects, and it's a list longer than the one my daughter mailed to Santa. It was long believed these pharmaceutical companies were trying to push product, ask your doctor. By the way, did you know that the only place in the world where drug companies can do this, where they can advertise on TV, is in America and New Zealand? They're not trying to move product. That was one of the many revelations of the COVID era, that the drug companies are more concerned about the investigative journalists than selling medicine. They're not stupid. They don't want negative news coverage. Who's going to badmouth their biggest source of advertising revenue? Ask your doctor about media manipulation. Side effects include being able to easily spot propaganda, knowing for certain most news is fake. See the media hoax list, which I included in that article, Projection Politics and Other Bullshit, which, of course, needs to be updated now because it was written way back in October. The media has made up all kinds of stuff since then. Another side effect is probably the taste left in your mouth by swallowing the red pill. Get a little stank on your breath, a little stank on you. Stankonia. Would you believe when I was a sophomore in college, my dad bought the Stankonia CD, the Outkast album with Sorry Miss Jackson and Ain't Nobody Dope As Me. There's another hitter on there. The B.O.B., Bobby Head, Keep Rag Talking, the Bombs Over Baghdad song. When I hear it, it reminds me of possibly the wittiest dude I've ever met. And of course, wit, like humor, is a sign of intelligence. The reason I think of this dude is we had a Halloween party in college, this huge bash. And when his crew pulled up to the scene, I remember they were dressed as convicts and they were jamming that song. So I've always thought of this guy. But get this. I was doing my review of 2024, which wasn't a good year for me. And I was putting together some things I wanted to accomplish in 2025. And I started writing out a list of people that I'd want to have on the podcast. And on the list was only like three or four names. And I had written the name Brian Daigle. And what do you know? I opened Facebook a few minutes later. Like, it couldn't have been more than 5 minutes after I put my pen down. And Daigle had commented Happy New Year on a picture that I had just posted. Somebody I hadn't talked to in 20 years. Like, not even Facebook chat. How does that happen? I don't know. But Daigle, if you're listening, it's been too long, my man. Let's have our next conversation be on microphones. Somebody let him know in case he doesn't listen. That's one of the weirdest things of having a podcast is you never know who's out there listening. And sometimes I'll encounter people who, you know, you encounter somebody who listens, a lot of times they won't tell you. And it's odd meeting somebody that could know everything about you, but you don't know anything about them. That takes some getting used to, not knowing what people know about you. I mean, it doesn't bother me. It just feels different than anything I've felt before. It makes you feel a little naked and vulnerable. So that's one of the side effects of podcasting. But I'm not complaining. The positives far outweigh the negatives. The list of side effects from podcasting, that's not even worth writing the North Pole about. But let me go back to my 20s. So at that time, I truly believe reading both sides of an argument was part of being a grown-up. Like, I really thought that. Like, how could somebody have an opinion on something without knowing the other side's argument? Like, how could you draw any conclusion without even being aware there was an opposing view? So I would read, like, in the New York Times, Maureen Dowd, Thomas Friedman, who also wrote a book about the earth being flat that I read, Frank Bruni or Brunei, Nicholas Kristof. But then after reading them, I would put it down, put the paper down, and pick up the Wall Street Journal and read Bret Stephens or Daniel Henninger, Peggy Noonan. I truly thought adults wouldn't feel so strongly about a particular issue unless they'd well understood both sides of the argument that they claimed to support. But I was obviously naive about a lot of stuff pertaining to adults. Like, because when you're in college, you don't have any window into the working world. And it doesn't help that at that age, you don't know much about psychology. I took a psychology class my senior year of high school, but I've said this before, school doesn't give you the sort of practical knowledge that you can use to better navigate your walk through the world. What I remember most from that psychology class, it's crazy what sticks to you, but I remember Brittany walking over to smell this girl, Ashley, just about every day, because she said that she liked the way that smoke smelled on people after they'd been smoking. And this was first period, 7:30 in the morning, and Ashley would smoke on the way to school. Well, a few years after we graduated, this is sad, but Ashley died. And I don't remember how, but it's sad. So I hope she's RIPing. Brittany, by the way, was our school. Cindy Mancini, remember from Can't Buy Me Love, one of my favorite 80s movies? In that movie, Cindy Mancini was the girl that everybody wanted to date. She was the goddess. Sadly, the actress who played her is no longer with us either. She died of a drug overdose in 2015. If I remember right, she was taking gabapentin, which I think she had just had a surgery. And the reason I remember this is because I was taking gabapentin at the time. But one of her friends had given her morphine. And we all know a quick way to die is to combine opiates with alcohol or other medications, because that leads to respiratory failure, which is what happened in her case. But the lesson I wish I'd learned in psychology class is that those who feel the strongest about an issue generally know the least. They're just feeling it through. They haven't thought it through. So it stands to reason you get less emotional with understanding, like when you know all the arguments for a particular issue. When you get to a place of understanding, your wheel has less squeak. You don't become the squeaky wheel if you understand. Or to use a football analogy, it's like they've studied their own playbook and now root for their team exclusively. And I compare politics to football because you'll see activists develop the same biases as a football fanatic, in that a diehard football fan, let's say he's doing the Monday morning quarterbacking thing, he's mostly incapable of seeing a flag that should have been called on the team he's rooting for. Isn't it so interesting how people form tribes? I know people who take a lot of pride in being a Texan, but if they're an Aggie, they hate UT. Or if you ride or die with the Cowgirls up in Dallas, you've got to hate the Texans, the Houston Texans. But if Texas were to play California, then Texans would form a new tribe with their fellow Texans, even though they hated them last week when UCLA beat the tar off of the Longhorns. You know, the first UT football game I ever went to was in 1997 versus UCLA. And I was going to see Ricky Williams. I wanted to see Ricky run. And they probably should have given me a refund when I left the stadium, which most people did at halftime because they were down 38-0 at half. The final was 66-3. You know, the only time I've ever gotten a refund going to a movie, I actually walked out and asked for my money back. And the girl at the window said, I was like, I'd like my money back. And she goes, Pootie Tang? And I said, yes. And I said, do a lot of people ask for their money back? And she said, yes. So that was a terrible movie. Then when the Olympics come every 4 years, everybody in the country's pulling hard for the red, white, and blue. And then, you know, what Reagan said, like the only way that there'd be peace on Earth is if we were attacked from aliens. So then everybody on Earth would form a tribe. So maybe we need that attack. Maybe that's what the drones are about. I don't know. Oh, one more thing about the DEIBS before I change topics. When you're not a lefty, group identity doesn't mean anything to you, because they couldn't care less about the color of your skin, and probably don't know anybody who does care. I talked about this last episode, but in America in 2025, you'll be judged when you open your mouth and start talking, because all people care about is what Martin Luther King talked about, who we're going to celebrate here in a couple weeks, but people only care about the content of your character. But non-lefties, the reason is non-lefties prefer to judge you on an individual basis. In the mind of a non-lefty, you're being grouped with others based on your character. Are you honest and hardworking? Do you want to serve others, or are you the entitled type? If an individual with good character ever needed my help, I'm going to help them. no questions will be asked about their skin tone because nobody gives a shit. Anyway, Gerwinder, you'll be happy to know, did another mega thread of useful concepts again this year. He did it last year, and I remember sharing and giving my commentary. But here they are, Useful Concepts by Gerwinder. You can follow him on X, Twitter, Gerwinder. He's a great follow. Number one on his list, social proof. When unsure how to act, people copy others, outsourcing their decisions. When Sylvan Goldman invented shopping carts, or trolleys, he calls them, people didn't want to use them because they seemed silly. So Goldman paid actors to use these trolleys in his stores, and everyone quickly followed. Social proof, and this is my commentary, is more of a thing now probably than it's ever been with social media. When I think of social proof, I'm reminded of a few things. One, there was a little Yachty song in 2016 called I Spy, where he said, I spy with my little eye a girlie I can get because she don't get too many likes. And there's truth in that. And that being that every bachelor listening knows to stay away from the girl who gets too many likes. Not just because she has so many followers, but that's the best indicator we have as to how she spends most of her time, which is on her phone. And has any girl been made more attractive by using her phone? Do you think women realize that, by the way, that you're not attractive while using your phone? I see women complaining online all the time about not being approached by men anymore. I wonder if they do any self-reflection to see if maybe they spend a little too much time with their eyes on their screens. Because I know in my single days, and I approached many people, not just women. I mean, I still just approach people to talk to them. But I never approached a woman who was consumed with her phone. But the whole copying others aspect of social proof to me is fascinating. And I didn't realize how mimetic people were until I spent time in other cultures. And I can tell you, women especially are very mimetic, meaning they copy the behavior of the women around them, which makes sense evolutionarily because being ostracized from the tribe throughout human history until very recently, that would mean certain death. But women also use social proof in the dating pool because they're not so good at vetting, which is, it's why they say that females let the males compete against each other and then wait at the finish line and sleep with the winners. Or why a man's wedding ring can be a chick magnet. It shows they've already been vetted thoroughly, right? If they're going to marry somebody. Not to mention it implies responsibility and stability and a bunch of other itties. But I could talk about social proof all day. Let's get number two. Number two is Twyman's Law. The more notable the data, the more likely it's wrong. This is because errors in data manipulation are far more common than genuine notable, i.e. surprising, results. Conversely, the more boring the data, the more trustworthy. Yes, my commentary, most data is motivated data. Unless you know who is seeking the data, or especially who's funding the research to come up with the data, you will rarely, if ever, see the whole story. I've already talked about climate change, I guess another great example would be like the documentary effect. People who watch documentaries tend to think it's true because they're only given one piece of data, not the whole story. Number three, spotlight effect. We often get the anxious feeling that our every move is being scrutinized by others. The truth is, no one is paying as much attention to you as you are. People are too concerned with how they appear to others to care much about how you appear to them. Here I'm reminded of the quote. I see it often attributed to Winston Churchill, but I don't think he said it. And the quote says, when you're 20, you care what everyone thinks. And then when you're 40, you stop caring what everybody thinks. And then when you're 60, you realize nobody was ever really thinking about you in the first place. I think you get the first taste of this when you're an acne-faced kid. You realize other kids are more concerned about their own pimp daddies to care about yours. When I was in seventh grade, they were having a pool party at the end of the year at the Howard Johnson, the hotel. And I had bad acne on my back. And I went to see a dermatologist when I was 11. And you know what he told me? He said, the sooner in life you get acne, the longer you'll have it. So that sucked for me. But because of the pool party that was coming up, I used to go out in the backyard every day after school and take my shirt off and hope that the sun would dry out my acne. Not the most pleasant of topics, I realize that, but yeah, that's what I would do every day that I got home, hoping that the acne would disappear, because no way did I want my seventh grade girlfriend to see what my back looked like. And then I got in a big fight about a month before the party and got suspended from school, and I wasn't allowed to go to the party. Bummer. All that for naught. But nobody was going to be as prepared at the party as me. I spent a lot of time prior to trying to get ready for it. Dang, we only got through three of those. I'll pick this back up next episode. Let me finish with kids say the darndest things. So we walk into my daughter's room the other day after she woke up, and the first thing she says is, "I had a bad dream." And we're like, "What happened?" And she said, "President Trump was in my room." And we're like, "Oh, what did he say? What did you do?" And she says, "Well, I didn't want him in my room, so I spit on the floor. Then he went and hid behind the nightstand." And then she woke up. So that was the first words out of her mouth that day, that she had had a dream about Donald Trump in her room, and she spit on the floor, and she thought that that would make him leave, but it didn't. All right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. I will chat back at you next time. Hope everybody's having a great 2025. Thank you.